From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. Talk about surprise endings. 2 years ago, the Writers Guild went to war against the agencies, and lots of people thought the union would lose. Now, Guild President David Goodman is savoring victory, but says it came at a cost.
You know, I was friendly with a bunch of agents, and it's civil, but I wouldn't call them friends anymore. And there have been some guild members whose friendships have gone away because of this, and that was difficult.
David Goodman is joined by the Guild's other David, Chief Executive and Lead Negotiator David Young. He's still a little emotional, too. Goodman and Young tell us how they stayed the course, and they look ahead to the Guild's future battles. But first on the news banter, help is on the way for theaters. Stay tuned, it's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my associate in banter, Matt Bellany. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So, Matt, we've been talking about the spring thaw underway, the increase in vaccine availability that we are witnessing, and the gradual reopening of things. You know, the Disney theme parks, which have been shut for months and months, very vocal distress from Disney about that, are going to be reopening under certain conditions in April. Theaters are reopening. The trend hopefully will hold. And while we've all been, while the country has been through trauma and some people have, of course, had terrible losses, we are in the middle of what feels like, finally some renaissance. And part of that is this stimulus package that has passed. And this thing would contain, it initially was $15 billion. It's now $15 billion plus another $1 billion and some more for in-person entertainment venues. Not the big theater chains, not the publicly owned companies, but the smaller chains are included in this. And, we've talked, Matt, about how in certain parts of the country where there aren't big theater chains, where there aren't a lot of choices, there might be like theater deserts where people will not be able to go to the movies if things didn't turn around. And also art house theaters that are independently operated and not playing the Avengers and Fast and Furious all the time. This could be, an important part of American cultural life. And I think that theater owners certainly see it that way.
Absolutely. And, hopefully the money in these bills will be more accessible. A lot of the independent theater owners have complained about the inaccessibility of some of the money that was allocated in that $15 billion bill. So hopefully the administration of this under Biden will be a little bit more effective. But it's a big deal. I mean, even if you take the numbers, we don't have specific numbers for these independents, but we can look at what happened to the big chains and extrapolate. I mean, AMC recently announced this past week that they lost $4.6 billion in 2020. Now, that is a staggering amount of money. Now, their CEO, for reasons that are still unclear to me, doubled his take-home pay to $20 million last year, but that's a whole separate issue. The fact that these theater chains lost so much money indicates that this is just a widespread wipeout. And, the big companies are able to raise money. AMC got a bunch of bridge loans and raised additional debt. But for these smaller companies, these independent or regional theater chains, it's really difficult. The Alamo Drafthouse theater chain declared bankruptcy, and that's a regional theater chain that was really doing well pre-pandemic, but just got completely wiped out.
Yeah, and we know that, these theaters are not going to just spring back to the way things were. Things weren't good in the first place, I should note, but also, because of the pandemic, a lot of trends were accelerated. We've talked about this before, and we are seeing the battle play out over windowing. We just saw a Disney movie, a really well-reviewed Disney movie, Raya and the Last Dragon, which Cinemark wouldn't play because Disney was not giving them the terms they wanted. And this is part of the hardball now. Every legacy company has a huge interest in keeping certain critical mass of theaters out in the world, but they are really also battling to have more control over how long those movies play in theaters. The big window that theaters protected for years is broken.
Yeah, we're looking at a theater business right now that has been completely transformed by the pandemic. This 3-month window of exclusivity that the theaters have enjoyed, gone. Almost every studio now has its own strategy for how to roll out these movies. And for most of them, it's 3 weeks perhaps with a premium video on demand component. For Warner Brothers, it's no exclusivity. The movies are going on to HBO Max the same day they're in theaters, at least for 2021. And for Disney, they're going to do this hybrid thing. The biggest movies are, yes, going to get that exclusivity in theaters. But as we saw with Raya this past few weeks, they've had that movie on premium video on demand demand on Disney Plus and in theaters. And oh, by the way, when they negotiate with the theater owners, they want the same percentage they always get, even though it's available on demand. And for Cinemark, at least, they wouldn't do that. They drew a line in the sand and they said no. So this is going to be a battleground for the foreseeable future. And it's the theaters just don't have the kind of leverage they once did.
So it seems like the month of May is going to be when, you know, that's the summer season normally. And this year, my God, we may actually have a version of the summer season. I mean, it's unclear to me how capacities will be adjusted as things go forward. But big movies, it looks like right now, are actually going to open in May. And I know, Matt, you've probably got a couple on your list that you are definitely going to be there for.
Sure. I mean, May is going to be the big kickoff with Black Widow, unless Disney moves it or puts it on demand at the same time. We're going to have our first example of a big Marvel movie in theaters exclusively. And will people return in the same way that they did pre-pandemic? That is the billion-dollar question. And I tend to believe they will. I think it's going to vary by market. You know, in some of the harder hit places like Los Angeles, maybe people will not be packing the theaters. But I think in, you know, the heartland and other places that are ready to go back, I think they will, especially if vaccine penetration is high. For me personally, it's going to be Memorial Weekend. I'm excited to see the Quiet Place sequel in theaters. And that's going to be another Disney movie, Cruella, over that holiday. And then in June, the Fast and Furious movie, which is going to be a huge test because that is an all audience movie. It is huge in China as well. And we'll see what the American film appetite is in China, because there's been some problems there lately. And there's a lot of big questions that I think are going to be resolved over the summer. Plus, these Warner Brothers movies are going to keep coming out. The Space Jam movie, In the Heights. Are people going to pay to see those in theaters when they're available on HBO Max? I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see about that. I don't know that I am going to be going to a big popcorn movie, but you know what? I would like to see a movie like Nomadland on big screen. You know, this something really beautiful is what I would look forward to. Maybe Minari. These are going to be a weird Oscars year. I don't think people will quite have the opportunity to go to the theaters in time for, you know, before the Oscars much, because that will be on April 25th. It's a very weird Oscars year. So I don't know if I'll be in a packed theater, but that's the part that I really miss. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, former editorial director of The Hollywood Reporter. When William Morris Endeavor became the last big agency to reach a deal with the WGA in February, it marked the end of an epic two-year struggle. The Guild's victory wasn't the ending many expected when writers fired their agents en masse in April 2019. The war was over two big issues. Packaging fees, a decades-old practice where instead of taking a standard 10% commission from the writers, agencies would take fees paid directly by a studio for packaging talent in a project. In some cases, that meant agents were getting paid far more than the writers they were representing. The other issue, the Writers Guild didn't want agencies to produce and own movies and TV shows. For some writers, that turned their agents into their bosses. Today, the WGA's two top Davids are with us to tell us how they won. David Young is the chief executive of the Guild and served as a lead negotiator in the agency wars. As you'll hear, some of those talks got extremely heated, so consider this a language advisory. David Goodman, who is president of the WGA West, has written for shows including The Orville and Family Guy. He was up for re-election in the fall of 2019 when the writers were still without agents. An opposition slate emerged that was ready to end the standoff, but Goodman won with more than 77% of the vote. When we spoke to Young and Goodman, David Young said packaging fees were the thing that kicked off this whole battle because they were the thing that most offended the Guild's membership.
You know, it was sticking in writers' craws in the television business for decades, and production at the same time in the longer view would involve not only television business, but the features business, really every aspect of the business. And I think that brought everyone together in the view that these things had to be addressed.
And, you know, one of the points I've read is that you, David Young, I think you're our first former plumber that we've ever had on the show. I just want to note that.
Yes. Well, I'm honored to be the first plumber on the show. I can certainly tell you that. And I mean that.
You come from outside is the point I was trying to get to the business. Yeah. And David Goodman, by contrast, you are obviously a guy with a lot of credits and working in the business. And I've seen the point of view expressed, you know, that this is what we needed. We need someone from outside who can come in and isn't thinking about, you know, relationships in the industry, which makes some sense. But as this battle moved toward being joined, David Goodman, was there part of you that was like, oh my God, this is just going to blow up so many relationships? Or were you all in from the beginning?
Oh, I was all in from the beginning. It's interesting that people see David Young as being outside. I mean, certainly.
I mean, he's been around a long time, yes. But
I've been in the Guild leaders for 15 years. David Young's been executive director the whole time. So 15
yes,
years.
But he has been selling projects or have a screenplay.
No, I get that. Yeah. No, I, you know, certainly I had some worries. I don't want to downplay the worries that I had about, would this affect my career? Would this, you know, damage me? But I also, you know, I think it's too corny about it. The Guild has taken care of me in some low periods because of residuals and because of pension and health. I've been able to ride out significant valleys in my career. So, you know, I felt like it was worth it. And I also was invested in the truth of what we were fighting about. So, yeah, I, you know, honestly, the harder thing for me has been I've lost a couple of friends through it. And that actually hurts more than it does not seem to have negatively affected my career. We'll see, I guess. And actually, I think a couple of the big moments that happened for me personally was getting surreptitious phone calls from very high-level executives telling me, this is a good fight, keep it up, which told me, oh, well, then this person will probably still hire me.
Well, damn, wouldn't we like to know who that was? Yes. And when you say friends, are you referring to agent friends or people in the Guild who were upset
with
the whole thing?
Both. I had, you know, I was friendly with a bunch of agents and it's civil, but I don't think I wouldn't call them friends anymore. And there have been some Guild members whose friendships have gone away because of this. And that was difficult.
You will not be surprised to hear that I would get calls from all manner of agents and even lunches, you know, all about how awful you are, both of you. and your ilk. And actually, the genuine emotion of just outrage and anger, it was really remarkable from where I sat. I mean, at what point do you say we are going to actually ask our membership to fire their agents?
You know, one of the things that is sort of misunderstood about being president of the Guild, the president of the Guild has no actual power. I'm not actually trying to shift blame onto anybody for this. I mean, I was the public face of this fight, but the board of directors and then the captain system and then the membership itself is in constant communication with the help of staff about where the membership is on these kinds of things. So that idea that we were going to fire our agents and that we made that decision from on high is just not true. We made the decision based on extended, constant conversation with as many members as we could talk to. And they were all on board because they understood what we were fighting for. And they understood that the agencies were, at that moment, not serious about negotiating, not serious about giving up anything they had, and that our leverage was firing the agents.
It was truly a stunning moment in the Hollywood, as long as I've been around. It just happened. And I think some people maybe didn't quite believe it could happen until it happened, but it definitely happened. And as I said, the emotion ran very high. At one point, David Young, it gets to the point where Rick Rosen, who's a very senior TV agent at William Morris Endeavor and represented that agency in this, said that you had threatened to, I think, to kill him. And I think you said you threatened to kick his ass. This is in court filings. You said you did not make that statement or any kind of death threat, but you did say that he was this is a quote, an asshole, and that you should kick his ass because he sent an email to his agents and Guild members saying you wouldn't meet because you were on vacation and you were actually dealing with a sick family member. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did.
Nothing more to say about that.
It exemplifies the way in which in the modern world, what I'll call propaganda is used to try to you know, belittle someone or undermine a position. You know, I was dealing with a sick parent on the Central Coast. Rick knew that. You know, part of the game of negotiations and power is you don't mess with people in an unfair way if you expect them to deal with you in a fair way. I don't do that. I come straight forward. I tell them exactly what I think. And by the way, when I said what I said on that phone call to him, I said exactly what I meant. You know, I'm sorry I was upset, but I don't take it back. You know, just it's part of the Hollywood thing that people, you know, glad handing and everybody's your friend. But then when you turn your back, they'll stab you. And that's not where I come from as a person. And I'm always going to resist that. And I resisted it in this case. So, you know, it's just part of the whole deal. Rick's a decent fellow, I think, at the end of the day. But he very much upset me and he wasn't moving the negotiation forward by lying to his agents and by proxy, the membership of the Writers Guild about why a deal wasn't getting made. Deal wasn't getting made is because they weren't anywhere near reality in terms of what their power merited. They weren't in a position to dictate to us. And since they were upset about that, they, you know, in this case, they just try to belittle me or belittle David Goodman or, you know, attack us personally. That stuff goes on all the time. You know, it's part of the game, but I don't bend to it.
I think someone in my publication called you a hothead who relishes creating chaos and can't close a deal. I would note that you seem to have closed the deal this time. Do you cop to being a hothead? David Goodman, is he a hothead?
Absolutely not. I mean, he gets angry like all of us, but I mean, he's not a hothead. I mean, it's amazing that that narrative is out there because David Young has served the membership of the guild, closed more important deals than any executive director we've ever had, and shown his willingness to negotiate. But it's always, always the narrative of the other side that David Young's an outsider. David Young doesn't understand the business. David Young isn't interested in negotiating. David Young wants to blow up the business. And he's shown through his work that none of that is true.
Well, David Young, maybe that reputation serves you in some cases, right?
I suppose. I mean, the usage of that propaganda is not intended to serve me or writers, believe me. but it doesn't hurt at the end of the day when all is said and done for the Guild to be viewed as a powerful entity in this business and one that's willing to stand up and fight when it needs to for writers. So if sometimes I have to be the, you know, the face of that and the one who takes some flack for that, that's fine. I'm at the, you know, I'm okay.
We reached out to Endeavor for a response from Rosen, but got no comment. Coming up after a short break, David Young and David Goodman look to the streaming future and the struggles that may lie ahead. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking to two leaders of the Writers Guild of America West, Union President David Goodman and Chief Executive David Young. They launched a war against Hollywood's powerful agencies in April 2019. At that time, more than 7,000 writers simultaneously fired their agents. Last month, the Guild celebrated a hard-won victory when WME, the last holdout among the agencies, agreed to its terms. David Young is a veteran of the labor wars. He led the WGA through the strike of 2007 and 2008, and before that, worked for unions outside Hollywood. In this most recent conflict, Young says a turning point for him came in July 2019, 4 months after the mass firing of agents. Typically, at that point in a struggle, he says, union members are suffering from a loss of work and might be weakening in their resolve. In this case, something else was happening.
I looked at our employment statistics for that part of the year in 2019 and realized that more writers were working than had ever worked in the history of the Guild. We were getting stronger relative to the other side every day. So that was a really key moment for me in terms of trying to understand whether or not we were okay or whether or not we needed to cut a deal and run. All those things that you're thinking about every day in terms of how good of a deal you can get and when to actually make it started to change in my mind towards, well, you know, they're going to have to come to us if we can hold together.
The WGA held, and the agencies did come to them eventually. It would take a full year for UTA to become the first of the big four agencies to make a deal. ICM followed close behind, and months later, CAA came to terms. That left WME, which finally signed an agreement with the Guild in February 2021.
You know, they were last because they chose to be last. They were last because they had most aggressively pursued, you know, a powerfully conflicted business model. So really, they had gone headlong into the production business and put huge amounts of money and debt into it. They were also the single biggest packaging agency. So it made sense that they would fight longer, frankly, and they did. Here's the whole thing about this, is that sometimes you can be in these situations and before you even get to the original deadline, both parties are in negotiation mode and there's a deal to be made. They were not in negotiation mode until December of 2020. They actually went into federal court in December and tried to get a federal judge to say that we didn't have the right to be a union, didn't have the right to represent showrunners, and didn't have the right to conduct this action. They went to the very jugular of our existence and asked a federal court to enjoin our action, which is the death of a labor union if they succeeded. And it was only when that failed that I finally got a phone call from Mark Shapiro, who's president of Endeavor and had not been involved, and said, let's talk.
I mean, to be fair, they did go for your jugular, but you at the beginning had gone for their jugular by invoking a racketeering statute, which is, I think they were very, very taken aback by, right? That was also aggressive. So this is hardball when you fight like this, right?
That's right. The difference is what I was saying was true. What we were saying, what the Guild was saying, which is that if you represent somebody for a living and you sell out their interests by being conflicted, you're in violation of fiduciary law and labor law. I still hold that position.
You have a really, really diverse membership in multiple ways, but financially above all, you know, the rich and the not at all rich. I don't know, did you, David Goodman, did people kind of say to you, this is hurting the people who don't have, you know, contacts and just, you know, just too destructive for the young, unknown writers trying to come up?
Well, it's so interesting because that was a narrative of people who were against this action, but it ignored the reality that most of the writers, new writers, got into the business with no help from any agent. So, yes, I'm certain that there were writers who were hurt by this. But, and, you know, the anecdote I tell is a true anecdote. I was talking to this writer. She was a new member, relatively new member of the Guild. She had to fire her agent. She felt she'd lost this momentum in her career because she had to fire her agent. And she's sort of expressing this to me. And I, you know, I feel terrible. And I say, well, you know, if, and this is early on in the fight. And I said, well, there may be a moment where we have to fold. And she's yelled at me. She said, don't fold. And she was all on board. I mean, I think that what so many of the struggling members of the Guild that you're talking about recognize that the Guild is there for them, that the Guild is fighting this fight for them, and had not gotten, in general, the attention and the help, certainly of the major agencies. The big four agencies were not in that business. They were not in the business of helping new talent. And what's interesting to me, too, was, you know, that the agencies united with each other. But I would hear from agents at the smaller agencies that they'd develop a writer, they'd get him a job, and then that writer would be stolen by one of the big four. And this fight was for the smaller agencies, too. So this idea that we were hurting the struggling writer, there were writers who were hurt by this, but they didn't fit any kind of generalized class. And certainly the most support I got that I felt were from new writers who saw, yeah, the way this business is set up, it's not set up to help me. So that narrative never took hold because it wasn't really based on a generalized reality.
Let me pivot to this question of streaming. Do you see this as a fight that is on the horizon or present right now?
The real question, I think, with streaming, there's two big questions. One, in a streaming model where you have five huge entities that stream everything on their own site, what's going to happen to overscale? And that's part of what we were trying to address with the agency campaign, because our members' income ultimately is comprised not just of what the guild negotiates, but what their agency negotiates.
Right.
And then there's going to be an issue, frankly, and a very big one, because these companies, our signatory partners, are only doing this to maximize revenue and profit, to turn themselves into a global distribution entity. That revenue pie and profit pie just keeps growing for the companies. And the way that talent gets compensated right now, although we've made regular improvements in our deal since we struck for the internet, the residuals on that are not as good as other markets that we have.
And you don't have data. They don't share. I think that's going to be a fight, right, coming ahead?
Well, in my view, it's very important. If you go back to 2007, when we struck for the internet, we actually got agreement on sharing of a tremendous amount of data on streaming on, you know, ABC.com or Hulu or wherever they were going to put products. And so that data was shared with us. That precedent is there now. Then you move to sort of the direct streaming model, and you have a Netflix, which is extremely reluctant to share any data and has taken the lead, of course, as we know, in that market, and regularly refuses to share with the guilds or with individual members real data about how well any given show streams. Yes, the data is there. It's easy to share it. They're going to make it sound like they'll never share it. And, you know, having that information and having talent get paid properly for, you know, get their share of the pie for what they create is always what unions are about. And I think all the unions in Hollywood are worried about this right now.
So I'll ask you one last really easy question. What are the chances we're looking at another strike? Silence.
I'm deferring to the president here.
Defer to the president, who's only president for six more months. So if there's another strike, it's not my problem.
Great answer.
You know, again, I go back to this. I know people don't believe this is true. It's up to the members. As we face the issues that will be faced in the 2023 negotiations, you know, there will be leadership who will discuss what are the issues on the table? What do we need to improve on streaming? What are the issues involving screenwriters? What are the issues involving comedy variety writers? Are there ways in which we could negotiate without having to go on strike? Or is this going to be a situation where the only way the company is going to move in significant ways is if the guild is ready to go on strike? And that will be a decision that's made as we get close to negotiations. Hard to know where the business is going to be then. How long does it take to the business to recover from COVID? Will people be working? Will the companies be feeling flush, or will they still be sort of coming back? All a lot of questions that we won't know the answers to till we're much closer to our contract date.
Writer David Goodman is the president of the Writers Guild of America West, and WGA West Executive Director David Young is the chief negotiator for the Guild. Thank you both so much.
Well, thank you for having us.
Oh, thank you. Always love talking to you.
Don't go yet. This week we have a podcast extra. Back in September 2019, we talked to writer and former KCRW contributor Rob Long. He took a contrarian position on the WGA battle, though he did fire his agent. But he told us why he did that very reluctantly. And he was honestly the only person we could find who was willing to talk on our air about a dissenting opinion. In the aftermath of the Guild victory, he's back to share some thoughts.
This is Rob Long, which is something I used to say every week here on KCRW on my short 4-minute commentary called Martini Shot. I'm still doing them, by the way, as a podcast. I'll tell you more about that in a minute. But I'm here to say two things. The last time I was on the business, it was to dissent from the then embroiling Writers Guild initiative to force talent agencies to stop the practice of packaging television shows. Additionally, the Writers Guild was trying to stop the agencies from owning and managing their own production entities. The idea was a talent agent should represent the client first and foremost, not a project. So what I said basically was that this wouldn't work and it's the wrong thing to fight. I was wrong. I mean, really wrong about the first thing. It did, in fact, work. CAA and WME, after a years-long brutal standoff, caved and gave in to the demands of the Writers Guild. But I'm not so sure I was wrong about the second part. I mean, I'm a writer in my 50s. I've been working since 1990. I've had good deals and bad deals. And as a showrunner, I've made more deals with writers than I've ever had made for me. So I'm familiar with the ways these things get worked out. What I resented at the time, and what I, you know, I still kind of resent, is the way the guild leadership decided for me what kind of representation I'm allowed to have. I mean, I'm just too old to be infantilized like that. To be honest, though, I have been the beneficiary of the packaging process. It's essentially how I got into the business in the first place, and it's been the heart of a couple of projects I've worked on, including some of the more recent ones. So I've got no beef with packaging. I mean, I'm not crazy about non-writing producers eating up my writing budget, or long-term holds put on writers and projects, or the prevalence of mini rooms taking writers off the market for months and months without paying them for their time. I mean, I'm against all of those things, but those are issues that writers will face in the next few years. Those are the things that will keep people from making a living here, from building a career, from being able to wait out a couple of years as they write their passion project. The way the business is going, and I'm lucky to be old to have started in 1990 when this kind of thing was inconceivable, well, there will be a handful of big showrunners and a lot of gig writers. Spoiler alert, the showrunners will do fine. The gig writers are going to struggle. And fixing those things is going to take muscle and a fight and, crucially, allies. The agencies used to be quasi-allies in fights like this, so it's a bad strategy, in my opinion, to prepare for a big war by first shooting your friends. Now, I could be wrong about that. I was wrong to think the Writers Guild leadership would fail at getting the agencies to surrender. But in my other life, I'm an entrepreneur and sometime investor, and I know that it's smart to give people on your side, even if they're agents, even if they're on their own side first, an incentive to work with you. What writers need for the future are more choices, more flexibility, more ways to get paid to tell their stories. For instance, I don't do martini shots for KCRW anymore, which is great, really. I did them for 16 years. It's time for someone else, for something new. But now I do them for myself. And you can hear them on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or martinishotpodcast.com. Choice and flexibility. That's the way it's going. And we may as well figure out a way to make that work for us. And that's it for this week, which is also how I used to end my commentaries and how I still do.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with help this week from Desmond Taylor. Paul Smith mixed the show. You can stream The Business as well as other great KCRW podcasts on the KCRW app. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.